This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's a very special Alumni Conversations episode where I talk with Yellow Sweater, aka Zinnia, about her debut poetry collection, Spikenard, and what she has been up to since graduating from YWP. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, I'm Zinnia. And I'm Yellow Sweater on YWP. And I just published my first book, and it's called Spikenard, which is like, I think I've only come across one person who was familiar with what Spikenard actually is. And that was my like religion professor at college, but it's a biblical reference. And basically it's an ancient perfume that was really popular in the Roman Empire. And there's this scene in the Bible where this woman pours a bottle of spikenard on Jesus's feet, and Jesus's male followers are all like, we could have sold the perfume and given the money to the poor, but Jesus lauds like the gesture's beauty. And I think I'm not a religious person necessarily. I consider myself an agnostic, but when I chose the title, I was thinking of this sort of the beauty of the gesture and sacred femininity and all of that. And I think that's kind of a core theme of the book.
No, that is so cool, because I literally, before you said the beauty of the gesture, I wrote that down like verbatim. I was like, oh my God. Yes, the beauty of the gesture. I think that's so interesting too, because I'm not religious, but I do think it's really interesting to read these stories from the Bible and the Torah and, you know, all those sacred texts and everything, and really see how like it's not so much about religion as like people. And there's these overarching themes of like, you know, beauty and love and familial trauma and heartbreak and all that. And it really is more of like a Bravo movie in a way, if you kind of break it down. But I think that's so cool, is that like the beauty of the gesture and like the kind of sacrifice of something that's beautiful to.
That's a really beautiful way of phrasing it. Yes.
Yeah. To kind of like give part of yourself to someone in a way.
Mm-hmm. Which I think in some ways is, I mean, again, I'm not religious, but it seems to be a major theme in the Bible itself, right? That the theme of sacrifice and giving part of yourself, right? To the whole in some ways. Yeah, I was really interested with what you were saying about these ancient texts and how they're being focused more on like the characters themselves than necessarily on like the morals or the religion, especially the really more ancient ones. And I think that's so interesting too, because there's this, I've always, the question of what delineates a religion from a philosophy has always really, really interested me. And I think in some ways it's this embrace of the material aspect of the universe rather than just the abstract, like and the mystery that comes from that too, because like we can fully and entirely sum up an idea, right? We know, like I can say that I am holding one computer, but that computer itself is so much more than one, right? It's all of the different pieces. And so I think that's interesting that like, I think philosophy relies on those necessary abstractions, while in a kind of more esoteric religious tradition, there is this ability to embrace, I don't know, the mystery of the material, I guess. And so that was also explored in the book. So.
Yeah. While we're on the topic of the collection, I was going to ask, what were some of the themes that were maybe intentional or coincidental? Because I feel like a lot of the time I'm looking over my poems and I'm like, I knew I wanted to mention that, but I didn't know that I would bring, you know, this kind of thing up a few more times.
So basically I had less than a year to put this book together. And so most of the themes were coincidental. I was like, what do I have? What do I like enough that I can actually put this in the book? I wasn't able to like write all new work for this project, because I was like in school full time and also trying to put this together, and like I didn't have a lot of time. And so it's like it's a collected work from like over the past 2 years, which is a strange experience, because it feels a little, I don't know, it's like all of my teenage angst memorialized in a in an actual physical book. But at the same time, I think there's something really lovely about that too, because it's as I was putting the collection together, I got to reflect on the past 2 years of my life and what I was thinking about. And I could see the themes emerging from that, you know, body of journal entries almost that I was sorting through. And so that was really interesting. I guess when I really first started putting the book together, I knew I wanted to have these little fragments of poetry in it. And I knew I wanted that to sort of help to deconstruct the longer pieces in the text. And so I wanted to have this kind of, I don't know, tension between these two different sections of like these longer kind of poems/essays, and then also these little fragments of poetry that would sometimes run directly counter to the points that I was making in the more fully formed pieces. And so like, I guess that was like the only main idea I had when I started putting the book together, is that I wanted that tension to exist. And then most of the other themes emerged naturally or from that idea.
Yeah. I think it's so cool that you kind of had that thought of the tension between it, or in a poetry class I took last semester, we spent a lot of time on tension in poems and like between themes or images or concepts, and how, you know, you can kind of, it's more interesting to have two things fighting against each other than working together. And it kind of like, what was interesting in that class was that I kind of learned to look at poetry as more of a story, really, instead of just, because when I write poetry, I don't really think that much about the order of it or the meaning of it. I just kind of write it and then figure that all out after. But I started to learn to be a little more intentional with it and more purposeful with my word choice and like, what really are the themes here and how do I want them to interact? And it sounds like that's kind of what you were doing.
Yeah, it was also a process that I learned when I was putting my book together, right? Because I had to think about those things, like thinking, you know, how the different pieces were interacting with each other on the scale of a book, which also got me to think about how the pieces were interacting with each other on the scale of each poem, which is, you know, it's like, it's a hard, yeah, it was sort of, and like a lot of the poems I'm writing now are very different than the pieces that are in the book. And that is partially because of how much I learned putting the book together, I think. I don't know. It's interesting. You're talking about that tension. And I don't know, in some ways I almost think it's what that awareness of tension is such a driving force in poetry, whether or not it's like kept tense or there's the release in it too, right? Like so the same professor I mentioned earlier briefly, who actually knew what Spikenard was, so I took this class, Catholic Classics and Their Historical Context, from him. And there's this one thinker that we read that was talking about, I don't know, he did a lot of work around, what's his name? I'm totally blanking. Chesterton. He did a lot of thinking around paradox. And so like paradox for me is like really, it's a place where a lot of poetry emerges, because it's like the sort of where the rational fails in some ways. But like, instead of seeing paradoxes as something that needed to be reconciled, he saw them as these two forces that could coexist simultaneously. And that was that's a really interesting thought, and one I've had before, but like it was really cool to hear. I don't know, like that was also another theme. I wanted that. I wanted to not have to reconcile. I wanted to be able to keep my paradox parallel, I guess.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's so cool to kind of have those big like philosophical realizations, and to kind of like start to come to terms with your beliefs and start to kind of, I feel like in a way, separate them from what you kind of grew up with. I feel like the age that we're at, like kind of that 18 to early 20s age, is really the time when you start to feel like, why do I believe in this? Like, why? Like, I know I was told I should, but why? And so that's kind of, that goes for like religion. And I don't know, for me, it's about like gender roles and about like careers. And like, I know that I should have a 9-to-5 job. And I know that I should have this kind of job that makes a certain amount of money, but why? Like, why do I have to do that? You know? So I think it's just a really interesting time, and it's definitely an inspiring time. But something you mentioned earlier was about the past 2 years and how that was kind of when you took the most of your writing from. And I feel like I've kind of start to think of my life in terms of like 2 year blocks, because yeah, I was in high school for 2 years. I did a 2 year associate degree, and now I'm going to have a 2 year bachelor's degree. So it's like, I'm kind of splitting up my adolescence into these 2 year chunks. And it's just really interesting to see how many things can change within 2 years, and how, like, in retrospect, it sounds like such a small amount of time, but like within it, it feels like it's just going on forever.
Yeah, especially when you're a teenager, especially when, like, you know, there's that period of so much turmoil, right? And interior turmoil, and also an exterior turmoil, and like the world we're living in right now too, right? Yeah.
Did you kind of go back to that, you know, younger version of yourself when you're writing through, like reading through those poems that you wrote?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think, and it's this, and I also edited them. And so it was strange to almost feel like I was editing a younger version of myself. That was, you know, bizarre. You could feel the two pieces of yourself coexisting at the same time, which is a really strange feeling to have. So, you know, yeah, it was interesting that I knew exactly where I was coming from, even if I disagreed with my younger self, right? Or I had felt like I'd changed. It was so easy to slide back into that mindset that I was inhabiting when I wrote the piece.
Yeah, when I look back at the poems I wrote when I was 16, I don't want to say that they're like immature, but I feel like just not as maybe understanding of the world as I am now. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's definitely a bit of naivety in it. But there is definitely still some themes that I still write about now. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I'm trying to do now with my writing is be more honest and write about what really matters to me, instead of telling myself like, oh, you shouldn't say that out loud, or like, just keep that to yourself. And I was wondering if you've experienced that kind of like self-censorship with your writing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I think, and it's strange too, because I've been hyper aware of it, having shared a bunch of vulnerable thoughts and like put them out into the world, right, with the publication of this book. And like, I can go to my local bookstore and see this like very intimate collection of thoughts on display for people to buy. And like, that's a very, very, very vulnerable space to exist in. And so in some ways I've almost become more conscious of how I'm editing myself while I'm writing, and like having, yeah, like I'm almost longing for more control, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for me there's like always a lot of anxiety about sharing my writing, even after doing so for so many years. Like, mm-hmm. I never know what someone's gonna think about it, or are they gonna think differently about me after knowing this, or like, this is kind of a very secret thought of mine, I don't know if I want to share this with them. But I'm trying to get over that. I'm trying to be more like, this is something that I really care about that really matters to me. And I don't want to be, you know, make myself feel small inside of my poems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting, the space like you inhabit inside of your poetry is a really, that's such an interesting metaphor and way of framing it. Yeah. I think there are some poems in which I do want to make myself feel small, and some poems in which I want to feel larger than the poem itself. But yeah. Yeah. I also just realized that I was supposed to read a couple of poems from the book, and I totally spaced that. So should I do that now?
Yeah, I'd love to hear some.
All right. American Poetry. Imagine my brand new copy of the best American poetry 2021 lying stiff and silent after the apocalypse. I'd like to remain conservative a little longer. Save seed for winter, watch it sprout in the spring. I break bread by myself, sitting on the floor, hunched over by the fire like God's lab cat watching it snow. I'm hoping another ice age will give us room to thaw again. Our Christmas tree this year was 13 feet tall. I was just grateful that I couldn't reach the top. Sometimes I want God to step out from the center of the sun, but other times I want him to stay there, pinned, the tallest branch stuffed up his ass. This winter, I've noticed how the sky grows blue every young night. Oh, it's growing, inching that much closer to everything. I'm thinking about how close blue is to orange. I'm thinking about how the snow hasn't stopped falling, about how I want to make a perfume out of all our empty orange peels, about how the mountains will melt into mud. on the unfinished walls of a century-old hardware store my grandparents turned into a home are portraits of the salmon they caught. More than alive, the fish tread water in their frames, open mouths, a gateway to heaven. Glorious iconography, a paintbrush, a pen, a knife. As I walk through the storm, I look back and see the windows tinted red with light, holy. The flags are flying, flopping like dying fish as they learn how to breathe. Who is going to cut a hole in the horizon and let out the smoke? Black velvet. Someone take a knife to the sky, slash it open like it's a piggy bank, and start counting change. I want to catalog everything I ever prayed for. Stranded on the mountaintop after the flood, Noah had only one grain of wheat left. He left the seed in the dirt on the deck of his new raft, then imagining it was God, he split the seed with a pickaxe. The Big Bang wasn't so much a beginning as infinity realized. Last night, my roommate was folding clothes by the light of her phone. I was listening to Bach and imagining gardens growing wild, roses with their roots on fire. There are so many different shades of mystery, more layers than a Victorian woman's underwear. Bach is perfectly succinct, yet his music never truly stops. Stoplights and highways, the city outside my window is bare to its being. Bare like piano keys, burned down to the bone by the acid of their road song. I'm awake. Night sky is a storage space for everything that was lost in the flood, for all the rainstorms that let loose too early. It's sagging, held up by a single C note. I keep throwing spears into an impenetrable, pregnable monotony. Keep listening to the songs they sing as they fly towards their graves. Songs they sing into the black velvet draped over their graves.
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's start with the first poem, American Poetry. What was your inspiration for this?
So it got really cold last winter. And I was at my grandma's house, and it was like over Christmas break. And it doesn't get really, normally, like in the last, you know, like when I was little growing up, it didn't get really cold or really warm where I live in Washington. It would stay generally in the kind of, I don't know, 40 to 70 degree range. For the most part, but because of climate change, we've been getting a lot more extreme weather. Like it's 90 degrees outside right now, and that is absolutely bizarre in Washington. It's actually not 90 degrees where I am. It's 90 degrees in Seattle. Poor Seattle, it's 80 here, but it feels really hot. And then last winter it got down to like 6, which is really cold, really, 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 really cold for Washington, which it normally like hardly ever even freezes. And so there was this snowstorm, and it was so beautiful. I love, it's like getting snow is a special treat here. And I was just, I don't know, it got me thinking about, and I was in my grandma's house, which is just a constant source of inspiration because they were kind of these beatnik hippies in the 1970s. And they have all of this art on their walls and all of these poetry books and all of this sort of history there in this old hardware store that they remodeled. And so I think I was just sort of thinking about time a lot, and I was thinking about climate change, I was thinking about history, I was thinking about ritual. I think just the space and environment I was in was the inspiration. And wow, I'm rambling.
No, that's so cool to hear. Weather is really inspiring to me. I feel like
it is.
And I wrote this short story for one of my creative writing classes a couple of semesters ago. And it was set during a snowstorm, it was more like the snowstorm was a metaphor for like the turmoil going in between, like between and within each of the characters. And so I think that like,
ooh, that's cool.
I know, I didn't even realize that till my professor like was explaining my own writing to me, and I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think it's so cool to use weather as this metaphor for like, interchange and collective change and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And also this idea of something being frozen, right? Frozen in time. And while everything else is changing around it.
Yeah, kind of like a snow globe effect, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, exactly. I called, one of the names for this poem, poetry was called, one of the first names for this poem was iconography. And I think is that idea of, you know, trying to turn something into an emblem, even if it wants to evolve, And as that as an act of worship too, I think this, but I have a lot of poetry tamed to iconography. Like, that's a title I use for so many of my poems. So I decided not to waste it on this one, but I think if I'm going to write another book, I'd call it iconography, but I feel like I need a little bit more life experience to become an iconographer.
So I remember you said that this poem was published on Rattle a bit ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was.
What was that like?
Oh, that was so exciting. I mean, in some ways, like I've loved Rattle magazine for a while, even before like getting published on it. I mean, it felt like a really big platform too, because it got to be the, you know, their poem of the day, which is sent out to like, I don't know, like 7,000 people or something insane like that. Right. And so like that, just that exciting, or also helped me feel a little bit more legitimacy to being published in a more major poetry magazine. Especially like one that's, you know, geared towards adults, not as I'm transitioning into being more of an adult, it's interesting to see how that, like,
I just submitted a couple of poems to Rattle.
Oh, awesome.
Maybe like a few weeks ago. I know. I know they had a $15,000 poetry prize contest.
Did you enter that?
I submitted.
I did too. Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A competition.
Yes.
No, I was waffling back and forth because I knew about it for a little bit, but I was like, there's no way I would be chosen. Like, I shouldn't even try. And I was like, you know what? Stop it. Just like, seriously, submit it and stop that. So that's something else I'm working on, is like just having more confidence in myself. But I submitted two poems that are like drastically different from what I usually write, which I think is definitely a source of some of the reason why I didn't want to submit it and why I was a little bit more hesitant, because they're very like, I described it as edgy, but I feel like that's just me trying to distance myself from it. It's more just like personal, and I don't write a lot of personal poetry about like very specific events that have happened to me. But it kind of goes back to that whole thing I was talking about a little bit ago about like being more honest. And so I think that was kind of a big step for me to finally like write it down and then actually send it somewhere. Even if no one reads it, it's just like the concept that I gave it to the world.
I totally feel that. I remember just the first time that I'd submitted a poem somewhere, and like, of course it was rejected and all of that, but like just like knowing that someone had read that work was like really, really interesting, a weird, strange experience. And like, yeah, Rattle's cool too, because like I feel like they're way more open to different kinds of poetry. Like, it's a good place to send work that you're experimenting with, because they want to read things that they've never really encountered before, or that go counter to their aesthetic. And so I appreciate that about them.
Mm-hmm. So the final line of this piece: as I walk through the storm, I look back and see the windows tinted red with light. Holy, the flags are flying, flopping like dying fish as they learn how to breathe. Who is going to cut a hole in the horizon and let out the smoke? I love this so much. And I feel like it's a big metaphor for so many different parts of life on a personal and, you know, like collective level. Like, who is going to be the person or the group or the thing system to finally tell the truth and like release all these like feelings of like resentment, anxiety, secrets, hate, you know, all of that. Like, that's kind of what I got from it. But I want to know, what was your intention or inspiration behind it?
Pretty much exactly that, right? It's this, I don't know. I mean, I was thinking, I was talking, right, with the flags are flying, flopping like dying fish as they learn how to breathe. It's really about revolution in some ways, right? This idea of like, and that question, right? Who is, I'm by no means a moderate, but I am, I don't know, more inclined to incrementalism, right? Into like slow and steady changes. But except when I think about climate change, and I'm like, I don't know if that's enough. And so I think with that lens, I mean, it's talking about a variety of, you know, issues in the American political climate, but particularly with like, who's going to cut a hole in the horizon and let out the frozen smoke, you know, it's very much talking about climate change. And yeah, I think what your reading of it was exactly right. Exactly what I had, or right is not the right word, exactly what I had read in it myself.
I think it's also kind of interesting for me when I hear other people read my writing and then like analyze it, or kind of like
totally describe
it. It's this weird like uncomfortable feeling in a way, where it's like, that's exactly what I meant, but I had no idea that it came across like that, or like that's not at all what I meant. So it's like,
yes,
it's always weird for me. It's always like, I had no idea.
Totally. I remember my grandma read my book, right? And I got this email with from her, and she was, because I had mentioned like an imaginary lover, and so she thought I was in a real relationship. So just like on a very literal level, that kind of misunderstanding is hilarious. But and that was an awkward email. I just
had a doctor's appointment, and my doctor keeps, you know, she has a file on me with all my health stuff. Mm-hmm. And she has clippings from my poems that have been published in the newspaper.
Oh, that's the sweetest thing ever.
It's very sweet, but it's also like, I'm not sure that I wanted you to read that, but I have no choice. So that's another like weird feeling, is that like, I had no idea that like that would happen. I feel like when you publish something, like you don't really fully understand like that it's just there for people. And like, it's hard to like, kind of, I don't know, for me, just publishing one poem, but I'm sure it's like a much bigger magnitude publishing a whole collection, is that like, anyone can read this.
Anyone
like,
can read it.
Anyone in the world.
Anyone can read it. My professor read it. Mm-hmm. Like, right. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally. And then anyone can take whatever they want from it. You know what I mean? Not just like they can read it in any way. And so that's vulnerable. But it's also really neat because there's this, in some ways, the reader becomes the poet too. It's this reading. I always viewed reading as a collaborative effort, as a sort of a collaboration between the reader and the author.
That reminded me of something. There's this YouTuber, Jack Edwards. He does a bunch of videos about like books and stuff. And there is this one video, I can't remember which one, but he was talking about reading and how like each book tells two stories, like the one that's actually written in it, and the other one is the experience you had while you were reading it. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And that's so true, is that like a lot of my favorite books, I kind of remember more for the experience I had while reading them than actually reading them. Like my childhood favorites, I honestly do not remember that many details about them, but I fully remember like sitting down with my dad and reading them before bed, or like borrowing the book from my best friend and reading it like late at night at a sleepover. Like that's what I remember a lot more. And I feel like that's also how I remember other things in my life. Like I went to Zoom the other day and we had this like icebreaker that was like, what's the best meal you had lately? And I was like, I don't know what I ate, but I remember the conversation I had.
So yes.
It's kind of like that similar vibe where like the people and the feelings make it more than like the physical thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. 100%. But what was that YouTuber's name one more time?
Jack Edwards, I'm pretty sure.
Jack Edwards. Okay, cool.
He does a lot of like book review kind of videos, and I mean he's hilarious. I remember one video, the first video I watched of his was like he was talking about how he was an English literature major, and he was like, mm-hmm. an English literature degree is a long-term investment in a personality. And I was like, that's great.
Yes,
that's great.
Yes, that's hilarious. I love, he says YouTube's resident librarian.
He's just like a cool guy, and I just like how his attitude towards reading, and like how it's just something he's so passionate about. I love people who are passionate about things, especially when I feel kind of tepid about it. Like, mm-hmm. I've had a little bit of a hard time reading lately. Like, I've got probably 5,000 books I haven't read yet that I have in my room just staring at me.
Same.
And I'm
giving me the evil eye.
I'm like halfway through 5 different books right now, but I haven't really been wanting to finish any of them because I'm just kind of like, this isn't what I want to read right now. And so I'm kind of still trying to find what I want to read. But I started reading Lolita, which I got, and I've been wanting to read it for a while. I heard that, you know, it's like the characters are very disturbing and the story is disturbing, but the writing is what you really pay attention to.
I think people don't value the, like, you can, I don't know, or sometimes I read something for the characters, sometimes I read it for, I don't really read things for the plot, but you know, that's an option. And then sometimes you read it for the writing, right?
Like the writing is just, I underline so many things because it's like, it's so cool. Like the very first like 3 sentences are just like, whoa, like the alliteration and the diction and syntax and everything. It's like, it's just incredible. And I was like, wow, this is so good. And there are definitely some parts that make me cringe and make me be like, oh, that's nasty. But there are some other parts where it's like, this just writing is so good. And like, I just can't believe it. So it's very interesting to start like making my way into more, I guess, edgier writing. And also it's a lesson in like unreliable narrators too. And I feel like I read this article in the New York Times a while ago that was about like autofiction and how everyone always assumes that fiction is autofiction. And, you know, like it's directly from the writer themselves. And like, this is based on their experiences and blah, blah, blah. But you kind of got to separate that and realize that like, this is probably a totally different vibe and personality from the writer. And like, just the fact that he could create someone that like vile without being that way, it's like, it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's like where do characters come from? Because I've always rejected the idea that like your characters are, you know, expressions of yourself. I don't think that. I think they could be an expression or even, yeah. I have no idea.
I don't write short stories that much anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I did, I always felt like my characters were just me, and that's why I hated them, because I was like, I only saw my flaws in them, and like, even though I gave them mm-hmm. all my best qualities, I still was like, no, that's the flaw.
Yes.
And so I never really fully enjoyed it. And I think maybe my struggle is that with first person narration, I always want to just go to my direct reactions and thoughts. And mm-hmm. I can't really separate it from like mm-hmm. mine and someone else's, but I think it's really interesting when people can. And I think that's definitely mm-hmm. like a lesson that you just learn with more time and more experience writing.
Sometimes I have the opposite problem to you, I think, when I write a short story, is that I have a character and then I find it so exhausting. I'll peter out on my story, you know, after like a couple thousand words, because I'll find it so exhausting to live inside someone else. It can be so refreshing at first, but then it becomes exhausting to live inside of someone else's head, because I always write first person. But like, I need to get my tolerance up for that.
Yeah. Have you been writing more fiction or poetry lately, or like which one do you think?
Oh, probably essays. I mean, because I had school, but I also love, I mean, that's my main love, is I love writing essays, but I want to write fiction. I want like a really good novel project that I can kind of lose myself in, and that's like not too serious. What I used to love to write fantasy, like all I'd write was fantasy. And I don't know, I found it hard to get back into that zone. And I'd love to be able to get back into that zone. It's hard for me to read fantasy these days too, which is so sad. I miss it. Yeah. Have you been doing any other form besides poetry, or are you focusing mostly on poetry?
I think just poetry. I think just like really different poetry. Just putting more energy and more honesty into my poems and like totally shifting them and kind of realizing that like, yeah, it's totally fine for the voice of my poems to mature with me. And I don't have to stay behind in my childlike kind of voice and mentality. I think it kind of comes back to, or relates to this idea that I have now about like how different types of writing serve me better in different parts of my life. Mm. You know, in school, obviously it's like academic writing. And then when I'm feeling really ambitious, it's fiction or short stories or a big project that I have in my mm-hmm. mind. And then when I'm just kind of feeling anything else, it's poetry. And sometimes I'm even, if I'm too emotional, then I kind of push poetry away and I'm like, no, I don't want to, you know, capture this. I just want it to be over.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just interesting how I feel very different about different forms of writing and how I'm kind of, my whole relationship with poetry itself is kind of changing, because it's like, now that I am going to be poetry major, sort of,
yes.
And I want to make that part of my career, it's more like, oh, this is a serious thing. This is an adult thing, mm-hmm. adult in quotation marks.
Yes.
And this isn't just like something that I did for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just a lot of my ideas right now are changing in my like perceptions of things. And maybe that's why I'm feeling kind of weird about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I get that too. Just like, it's like, it almost feels like in some ways that the form you choose is part of the expression of yourself, right? And I don't know, like, I sort of fell into poetry more like in the last year, like last 2 years, and I'd never really done poetry before. I'd always done fiction and nonfiction. And then I had this big like sort of almost kind of like job with this, this Seattle Youth Poet Laureate. And it was like an absolutely amazing opportunity. And I got to, you know, really explore my poetic voice, and I had a huge platform for my poetic voice. But like at the same time, I'm like, is poetry really what I want to devote my, you know, creative energy towards? And I'm like, maybe it is. I haven't figured that out yet. So it's never something I'd really thought of doing that much before the last couple of years.
Even like different forms of poetry, I feel like changed to me. Like I wrote a lot of prose poetry for a while. I was in a really deep prose poetry phase, and that was like all I wrote. And then I was in a really like lowercase phase, and then a really like stanza phase. I haven't written in stanzas in years, actually. I don't know why. I have this like big aversion to stanzas now. I don't know. But it's just interesting how like that's just like my default, and I go through phases of like needing that. And of course, everyone knows my underwater phase, which I absolutely hate now. Like I look back and I have like 50 poems that I wrote a few years ago where everything is underwater. And I don't know why. The poems are like just all underwater. That's just like my whole vibe. I wish I had made it one poem and not 50 different poems, but you know,
sometimes 50 poems get distilled into one poem.
Felt that. But I just think it's interesting how I was really leaning more towards prose poems for a very long time. But now I'm just kind of, actually, no, the last two poems I wrote were also prose poems. So I think maybe that's just what I'm more drawn to now, maybe because it kind of borders that line of poetry and fiction.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's probably why I turned to prose poetry when I first started getting into poetry, right? Because I'd always written sort of short poetic pieces of prose. And so, you know, wasn't very much farther to get to prose poetry. And then like, I don't know, I feel like I've sort of, it's been going in waves, but I've gradually trended towards more kind of form-based poetry. And like, I actually wrote my first ghazal. Have you ever heard of a ghazal or a guzzle?
I have written many and I love
I love it too. It's such a great form. I mean, I've been obsessed with Hafiz recently. And so like that was a lot of inspiration, but it was so fun too, because like not only does it have structural constraints, I mean, you can also incorporate these sort of traditional metaphors and these sort of thematic constraints into it too, right? There's like, you're supposed to have a statement and then a proof of that statement. And then like finding some way to incorporate your sign, your name at the end. Like it's so much fun. And it feels like it's really well suited to what it's supposed to, or like to the themes that it's like traditionally expressed, you know, like the refrain and the love. And I mean, yeah, and mystery and paradox and all of that. So it's, yeah, so much fun. And then I love it too, because I have all of these fragments on my computer and I can incorporate those fragments into these separate, you know, each bayit is its own thing in a ghazal. And so it can kind of loosely tie together, but it can also be viewed as separate. It's just a great form. So versatile and so interesting and so challenging.
I really think it's so much fun. I love the signature part at the end. And I did one where something about like the irises of your eyes, and I was like, oh, this is so clever.
Nice. Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
I read a bunch for my poetry class, and I feel like it's a, like, there are a lot of forms of poetry that just have like the form itself is a theme, you know, like,
Yes. That's so beautifully said.
Yeah. Like a Sestina. I love Sestinas. Mm-hmm. They're so cool. There's one I have to recommend. Sestina Bob.
Yes, please. Sestina Bob. Okay.
Yeah. It's so good. It's this graduate student wrote it. I think it was like the early 2000s, but I read it on like a blog post, and he said that he was in this MFA program and it was all like hoity-toity writing that he was doing. Yes. And then he just wanted to have fun. And so he wrote this poem. Sestina is a kind of form of poetry where you've got five lines and I think like five or six stanzas, but the same ending line for each one, ending word on each line, and like just in different formations. So it's kind of like a spiral effect.
Oh, whoa.
It's cool. It's hard to picture unless you see like a diagram of it or like the actual poem. But anyway, he chose to end each line with Bob. And so it was about how like his ex-girlfriend got together with this guy, Bob, and like, Bob must be so much better than him. Bob doesn't have these issues. Bob's like this, Bob's like that. And it's just, it's like obsessive and hilarious. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And it's so cool that it's just like, it's so simple in the fact that he only chose one word, but it's also complex in the fact that it's one word.
It's you said obsession, and that's such an interesting word, right? Too, like poetry forms that have that refrain in them, that repeated word, always seems so well suited towards obsession, like a ghazal in some ways, like, you know, that the in the Farsi poems you have like the beloved in that, and that is like this emblem of obsession, and it's so interesting. Yeah,
it's a very like longing, love-struck mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I know I'm going to say this wrong, but Pantoums.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them.
I wrote a bunch of them, like, probably like dozens of those. I love it. It's from what I remember, I've got it up on my wall because I kept forgetting it. But there's like about a dozen lines, three stanzas or more of four lines. And then mm-hmm. you kind of leapfrog the ending word or the ending Ooh, cool. rhyme.
Yeah.
So that's like every other, again, it's hard to describe, or maybe I just don't describe it all, but
yeah, I've seen them before and I've never like actually looked up what the exact requirements of them are.
You know what it is? It's the same exact line that you repeat. So
oh,
like
interesting.
Line A
yeah.
In stanza one becomes line B in stanza two, and you know, on and on like that, like leapfrog. I wrote a bunch of those and I had so much fun playing around mm-hmm. with it. I wrote one about my childhood in Florida and how it was really messy and really like really crazy in retrospect, but I didn't know yeah. it at the time. And so kind of that like seeing the kind of ugliness mm-hmm. in it after the fact, and that form really lent itself to it. And to like each time mm-hmm. I repeated the thought or the image, it became more like honest mm-hmm. and more kind of turned upside down and inside out and kind of gross mm. and like, oh, I can't believe that it was that like sketchy, you know?
It's this almost this prism effect, right? You can see all these different sides. It's almost cubist in a way, which is interesting.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I also feel like, I mean, you were repeating that line, so it's sort of suited to reminiscence as well. And that's like, yeah, that's really mm. neat.
That was like one of my favorite poems I ever wrote. I really enjoyed that. And then the last one that really stands out to me on the topic of poetry forms is in my poetry class, we read this poem that like totally changed me. It was called Afterglow mm-hmm. by Avian Jordan, I think. And it's the form is like a dictionary definition. And so it's like afterglow, noun. And then it's like one, blah, 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 two, blah, blah, blah. See also this, see also this. And so it's like, kind of this definition or these different scenes, kind of like a montage or like a short film of this relationship all around the concept of afterglow and like a sunset and light and the light in a relationship and everything. It's so good. I love it. And so I wrote a poem, it's called Middle, and it was about my brothers and I'm the middle child and how that's like a big part of my identity. But also like at that point that I wrote it, I felt like I was very much in the middle of a lot of different parts of my life. I was waiting to hear back about my college acceptance or rejection. I didn't know at that point, which was like a big, like, I'm on the edge of like a cliff, not knowing what's happening kind of thing. And I had just turned 18 and I was like in the middle of childhood and adulthood and in the middle of like understanding myself in the middle of childhood. And so that was like one of my favorite poems because I felt like I had really hit a breakthrough in all of the feelings that I had. And kind of like drawing inspiration from so yeah. many different parts of my life into one place. And so I really, that was like a poem I really enjoyed. And I'm glad that I enjoyed it because I feel like nowadays I don't really enjoy my poems that much. I get a little too high strung yes. about them. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Right. I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's more pressure on you now when you write poems?
Mm, yeah, I do. Some. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm also not working towards anything with my poems. So like, there's a little bit of pressure off. Like, I don't, you know, I published my book already, right? So I'm like, these poems don't have to, you know, be used exactly. But I haven't been writing as much either, which is sad. Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to mention a bit was the blurbs for your collection.
Oh, that was fun.
I was like, that is so cool. They have blurbs. I was like, this is a real book.
It's a real book. Getting the blurbs was absolutely terrifying. I had to email like, you know, pretty well-known poets and ask them for blurbs. So that was an experience. you know, a good one. It was a good skill to have, but it was also like really pushed me. I was so embarrassed, but it was really, really sweet getting them back. And yeah. Yeah. Like I admire those people so much. Like I got to be on a panel with Rena, Rena Peace, one of the people who gave me a blurb, and she's the Washington State Poet Laureate. And I mean, she's just a really cool person. And so it was really, really, really special. Like, I don't know, getting her feedback on my work and having her having read my work, like amazing. Yeah.
I know, I read them and I was like, I'm so proud of you. That's so cool. It's like, it's a cool thing to see like someone that you know and like their writing as seen by like, you know, people outside of your like normal circle, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I described that well, but it's like, you know, if someone were to review my poems, I'd be like, that's so weird, but that's so cool, but that's so like scary.
So scary. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really strange because I have also no idea who has like has a copy of this book at this point. Mm. Like, I just don't even know, you know, it's impossible to keep track of. I'm like, that's so scary.
One of the reviews that I really liked wrote about how, you know, the kind of themes of making peace with the body, the question of God, and the persistent uncertainty of belief. That's a direct quote. And I was like, that's so cool because that's like almost exactly how I would have described it, was, you know, really thinking about God and beliefs and yourself and your mind and this whole transformation kind of story and reality and adulthood and kind of like, where do I stand among all these kind of philosophies and kind of things like that?
Where do I stand amongst philosophies? That's such a great way to describe the question, right? And the question of growing up too, right? It's like, I don't know, something interesting to me is that like, I used to be super interested. There's this ancient philosophical debate between essentialism and relativism that's been going on since like Plato. And that I feel like when I was younger, I was attracted to this more relativistic like understanding of reality, like, you know, it's all subjective, it's all a dream, all of that. And I think for me, part of growing up has been finding truths, things that feel really stable, things that feel like they have a soul, that aren't, you know, subject to that, I don't know, relativistic subjectivism. That's a lot of words, but yeah. And that, and or just finding a new way to approach truth and how I want to approach truth. Yeah, it's a process of growing up in some ways.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I feel like that's so interesting because that's definitely where I'm at too. And I feel like we're both kind of working with those themes of truth and belief and like honesty and that kind of thing. But something that you said about belief, it reminded me of, there's this podcast, Dear Hank and John, that I listened to a while ago. I haven't listened to it in a bit, but it's with John Green and Hank Green, his brother. John Green, the author of The Fault in Our Stars, Paper Town, Looking for Alaska, all those classics that I was like obsessed with in middle school. And the one time they had this discussion and John Green was talking about how like belief in God or kind of any higher power or whatever, he's always questioning it, like, how can you believe in God? And he was like, I think maybe I believe like around God. And I was like, ooh,
that's a really interesting reframe, right?
Like, and I was like, whoa,
that's like, so cool,
right? It's like, not even with God specifically, but like, I believe around these concepts of society or around these concepts of like, this is life.
Oh, that's such a cool quote. I'm going to be thinking about that one for a long time. It reminds me too of like, Heidegger is a complicated historical figure, but a really interesting, I really like how he deconstructs these sort of epistemological dichotomies that have been like so, just dominated philosophical conversation. Like, you know, is reality subjective, or is reality objective, or is like, you know, that kind of thing. But like with his approach to truth is like, you to know something, you have to like learn to love it first, or learn to have a sort of a personal relationship with it first, right? And so that's that's sort of a bleak path to approaching the question of like truth is like, and it, I love it is because it gives so much agency to the outside world. It's like, I in some ways it seems like, you know, there's this idea of soul coming back into the conversation, which I really, really appreciate.
Was it to know something, you have to love it? Was that it?
No, I don't think there's an, that's not an actual quote, but like you have to get, you have, to know something, you have to get to know it.
Ah.
You know, like you have to actually, you have to approach it on kind of a personal level. And that's also not a direct quote, but that's kind of like the vibe.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to hear more about your poems and your collection and what that's been like and kind of how we're, I feel like we're very different in our writing, but also in very different, very similar places, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So it's like fun to be on the brink of something, yeah. But also looking down off the brink yeah. of something.
A lot of brinks yeah. around here.
A lot of brinks.
Well, I'm so glad I could catch up with you. I'm so Me excited too. About your poetry. I feel like it's so exciting.
I'm so excited about yours too. I want to read more of yours.
It's so exciting to see someone from YWP like grow up, because I feel like this sounds weird, but mm-hmm. I feel like I have this like really close bond with everyone from YWP, and I just want to like mm-hmm. totally. Be so excited for them, because I'm like, we came from the same world.
Yes, absolutely. That yeah. Oh, it's so fun to watch community evolve.
Yes, really, exactly.
Really exciting.
Congratulations yeah. again. And
thank
I
you.
Hope that you're going to have a great summer and fall and continue catching up with us in a bit for this special alumni conversations.
Yes, yay.
This has been a very special Alumni Conversations episode of Line Break with me, Isa Virus, and Yellow Sweater. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and see you next time.